Chapter 89. Mr. Weller the Elder delivers some critical sentiments respecting literary composition, and, assisted by his son Samuel, pays a small installment of retaliation to the account of the Reverend Gentleman with the Red Nose, the morning of the 13th of February, which the readers of this authentic narrative know, as well as we do, to have been the day immediately preceding, that which was appointed for the trial of Mrs. Bartle's action, was a busy time for Mr. Samuel Weller, who was perpetually engaged in traveling from the George and Vulture to Mr. Perker's chambers and back again, from and between the hours of 9 o'clock in the morning and 2 in the afternoon, both inclusive. Not that there was anything whatever to be done, for the consultation had taken place, and the course of proceeding to be adopted had been finally determined on. But Mr. Pickwick, being in the most extreme state of excitement, persevered in constantly sending small notes to his attorney, merely containing the inquiry, "Dear Perker, is all going on well?" Apostrophe to which Mr. Perker invariably forwarded the reply, "Dear Pickwick, as well as possible." The fact being, as we have already hinted, that there was nothing whatever to go on, either well or ill, until the sitting of the court on the following morning. But people who go voluntarily to law, or are taken forcibly there, for the first time, may be allowed to labor under some temporary irritation and anxiety. And Sam, with a due allowance for the frailties of human nature, obeyed all his master's behests with that imperturbable good humor and unruffable composure which formed one of his most striking and amiable characteristics. Sam had solaced himself with a most agreeable little dinner, and was waiting at the bar for the glass of warm mixture in which Mr. Pickwick had requested him to drown the fatigues of his morning's walks, when a young boy of about 3 feet high, or thereabouts, in a hairy cap and fustian overalls, whose garb bespoke a laudable ambition to attain in time the elevation of an hostler, entered the passage of the George and Vulture, and looked first up the stairs, and then along the passage, and then into the bar, as if in search of somebody to whom he bore a commission, whereupon the barmaid, conceiving it not improbable that the said commission might be directed to the tea or tablespoons of the establishment, accosted the boy with, "Now, young man, what do you want? ? Is there anybody here named Sam?" ? Inquired the youth, in a loud voice of treble quality. "What's the t'other name?" ? Said Sam Weller, looking round. "How should I know?" ? Briskly replied the young gentleman below the hairy cap. "You're a sharp boy, you are," said Mr. Weller. "Only I wouldn't show that worry fine edge too much, if I was you, in case anybody took it off. What do you mean, by coming to a hotel, and asking Arthur Sam, with as much politeness as a wild Indian?" ? 'Cause an old gentleman told me to, replied the boy. "What old gentleman?" ? Inquired Sam, with deep disdain. "Him as drives a Ipswich coach, and uses our parlor," rejoined the boy. "He told me yesterday morning to come to the George and Welter this afternoon, and ask for Sam." It's my father, my dear," said Mr. Weller, turning with an explanatory air to the young lady in the bar. "Blessed if I think he hardly knows what my other name is. Well, young broccoli sprout, what then?" Why then, said the boy, "you was to come to him at 6 o'clock to our house, 'cause he wants to see you Blue Boar, leadin' o' market. Shall I say you're comin'?" You may venture on that ere statement, sir," replied Sam. And thus empowered, the young gentleman walked away, awakening all the echoes in George Yard as he did so, with several chaste and extremely correct imitations of a drover's whistle, delivered in a tone of peculiar richness and volume. Mr. Weller, having obtained leave of absence from Mr. Pickwick, who, in his then state of excitement and worry, was by no means displeased at being left alone, set forth, long before the appointed hour, and having plenty of time at his disposal, sauntered down as far as the mansion house, where he paused and contemplated, with a face of great calmness and philosophy, the numerous cats and drivers of short stages who assemble near that famous place of resort, to the great terror and confusion of the old lady population of these realms. Having loitered here for half an hour or so, Mr. Weller turned and began wending his way towards the Dental Market through a variety of by streets and courts. As he was sauntering away his spare time and stopped to look at almost every object that met his gaze, it is by no means surprising that Mr. Weller should have paused before a small stationer's and print seller's window. But without further explanation, it does appear surprising that his eyes should have no sooner rested on certain pictures which were exposed for sale there than he gave a sudden start, smote his right leg with great vehemence, and exclaimed, with energy, "If it hadn't been for this, I should have forgot all about it, till it was too late." The particular picture on which Sam Weller's eyes were fixed, as he said this, was a highly colored representation of a couple of human hearts skewered together with an arrow, cooking before a cheerful fire, while a male and female cannibal in modern attire, the gentleman being clad in a blue coat and white trousers, and the lady in a deep red pelisse with a parasol of the same, were approaching the meal with hungry eyes, up a serpentine gravel path leading thereunto. A decidedly indelicate young gentleman, in a pair of wings and nothing else, was depicted as superintending the cooking, a representation of the spire of the church in Langham Place, London, appeared in the distance, and the whole formed a Valentine, apostrophe of which, as a written inscription in the window testified, there was a large assortment within, which the shopkeeper pledged himself to dispose of, to his countrymen generally, at the reduced rate of 1 and 6 pence each. I should have forgot it. I should certainly have forgot it. Said Sam. So saying, he at once stepped into the stationer's shop, and requested to be served with a sheet of the best gilt-edged letter paper, and a hard-nibbed pen which could be warranted not to splutter. These articles having been promptly supplied, he walked on direct towards the Dental Market at a good round pace, very different from his recent lingering one. Looking round him, he there beheld a signboard on which the painter's art had delineated something remotely resembling a cerulean elephant with an aquiline nose in lieu of trunk. Rightly conjecturing that this was the Blue Boar himself, he stepped into the house and inquired concerning his parent. "He won't be here this 3/4 of an hour or more," said the young lady who superintended the domestic arrangements of the Blue Boar. "Worry good, my dear," replied Sam. "Let me have 9 pennyworth o' brandy and water, Luke, and the inkstand, will you, miss?" The brandy and water, Luke, and the inkstand, having been carried into the little parlor, and the young lady having carefully flattened down the coals to prevent their blazing, and carried away the poker to preclude the possibility of the fire being stirred, without the full privity and concurrence of the Blue Boar being first had and obtained, Sam Weller sat himself down in a box near the stove, and pulled out the sheet of gilt-edged letter paper, and the hard-nibbed pen. Then looking carefully at the pen to see that there were no hairs in it, and dusting down the table, so that there might be no crumbs of bread under the paper, Sam tucked up the cuffs of his coat, squared his elbows, and composed himself to write. "To ladies and gentlemen who are not in the habit of devoting themselves practically to the science of penmanship, writing a letter is no very easy task, it being always considered necessary in such cases for the writer to recline his head on his left arm, so as to place his eyes as nearly as possible on a level with the paper, and, while glancing sideways at the letters he is constructing, to form with his tongue imaginary characters to correspond. These motions, although unquestionably of the greatest assistance to original composition, retard in some degree the progress of the writer, and Sam had unconsciously been a full hour and a half writing words in small text, smearing out wrong letters with his little finger, and putting in new ones which required going over very often, to render them visible through the old blots, when he was roused by the opening of the door, and the entrance of his parent. "Well, Sammy," apostrophe said the father. "Well, my Prussian blue," apostrophe responded the son, laying down his pen. "What's the last bulletin about mother-in-law?" Apostrophe, Mrs. Veller passed a very good night, but is uncommon perverse and unpleasant this morning. Signed upon oath, Tony Veller Esquire. "That's the last one as was issued, Sammy," apostrophe replied Mr. Weller, untying his shawl. "No better yet?" Apostrophe inquired Sam. "All the symptoms aggravated," apostrophe replied Mr. Weller, shaking his head. "But what's that you're a doing of? Pursuit of knowledge under difficulties, Sammy?" Apostrophe, "I've done now," apostrophe said Sam, with slight embarrassment. "I've been a writin'." Apostrophe, "So I see," apostrophe replied Mr. Weller. "Not to any young woman, I hope, Sammy?" Apostrophe, "Why, it's no use a saying it ain't," apostrophe replied Sam. "It's a Wellington." Apostrophe, "A what?" Apostrophe, exclaimed Mr. Weller, apparently horror-stricken by the word. "A Wellington," apostrophe replied Sam. Samivel, apostrophe said Mr. Weller, in reproachful accents, "I didn't think you'd ha done it. Arter the warning you've had o' your father's vicious propensities, arter all I've said to you upon this here worry subject, arter actually seeing and being in the company o' your own mother-in-law, which I should ha thought was a moral lesson as no man could never ha forgotten to his dying day. I didn't think you'd ha done it, Sammy, I didn't think you'd ha done it." Apostrophe, these reflections were too much for the good old man. He raised Sam's tumbler to his lips, and drank off its contents. "What's the matter now?" Apostrophe, said Sam. "Never mind, Sammy," apostrophe replied Mr. Weller, "it'll be a worry agonizing trial to me at my time of life, but I'm pretty tough. That's one consolation, as the worry old turkey remarked when the farmer said he was afeard he should be obliged to kill him for the London market." Apostrophe, "What'll be a trial?" Apostrophe, inquired Sam. "To see you married, Sammy, to see you a deluded victim, and thinking in your innocence, that it's all worry capital," apostrophe replied Mr. Weller. "It's a dreadful trial to a father's feelings, that ear, Sammy," apostrophe, "nonsense," apostrophe said Sam. "I ain't a goin' to get married, don't you fret yourself about that. I know you're a judge of these things. Order in your pipe, and I'll read you the letter. There." Apostrophe, we cannot distinctly say whether it was the prospect of the pipe or the consolatory reflection that a fatal disposition to get married ran in the family and couldn't be helped, which calmed Mr. Weller's feelings and caused his grief to subside. We should be rather disposed to say that the result was attained by combining the two sources of consolation, for he repeated the second in a low tone, very frequently, ringing the bell meanwhile, to order in the first. He then divested himself of his upper coat, and lighting the pipe and placing himself in front of the fire with his back towards it, so that he could feel its full heat, and recline against the mantelpiece at the same time, turned towards Sam, and, with a countenance greatly mollified by the softening influence of tobacco, requested him to fire away. Apostrophe, Sam dipped his pen into the ink, to be ready for any corrections, and began with a very theatrical air, "Lovely, apostrophe, stop, apostrophe," said Mr. Weller, ringing the bell. "A double glass o' the inwariable, my dear." Apostrophe, "Very well, sir," apostrophe replied the girl, who with great quickness appeared, vanished, returned, and disappeared. "They seem to know your ways here," apostrophe observed Sam. "Yes," apostrophe replied his father, "I've been here before, in my time." "Go on, Sammy." Apostrophe, lovely creature, apostrophe, repeated Sam. Tain't in poetry, is it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, interposed his father. No, no, apostrophe, replied Sam. Worry glad to hear it, apostrophe, said Mr. Weller. Poetry's unnatural. No man ever talked poetry except a beetle on Boxing Day, or Warren's Blacken, or Roland Zoil, or some of them low fellows. Never you let yourself down to talk poetry, my boy. Begin a gin, Sammy. Apostrophe, Mr. Weller resumed his pipe with critical solemnity, and Sam once more commenced, and read as follows. Lovely creature, I feel myself a damned apostrophe that ain't proper, apostrophe, said Mr. Weller, taking his pipe from his mouth. No, it ain't damned, apostrophe, observed Sam, holding the letter up to the light. It's shamed, there's a blot there, I feel myself ashamed. Apostrophe, worry good, apostrophe, said Mr. Weller. Go on. Apostrophe, feel myself ashamed, and completely circle apostrophe, I forget what this here word is, apostrophe, said Sam, scratching his head with the pen, in vain attempts to remember. Why don't you look at it then? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Mr. Weller. So I am a looking at it, apostrophe, replied Sam, but there's another blot. Here's a C, and a I, and a D. Apostrophe, circumvented, perhaps, apostrophe, suggested Mr. Weller. No, it ain't that, apostrophe, said Sam, circumscribed. That's it. Apostrophe, that ain't as good a word as circumvented, Sammy, apostrophe, said Mr. Weller gravely. Think not? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Sam. No, then like it, apostrophe, replied his father. But don't you think it means more? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Sam. Well, perhaps it's a more tenderer word, apostrophe, said Mr. Weller, after a few moments' reflection. Go on, Sammy. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.